Ishmael was in a dim corner as far away as possible, with 2 10-year-olds in attendance. I stood there giving him a smoldering look, and he sat there placidly ignoring me until the boys moved off. After a couple more minutes passed, I gave up and said, "Tell me this. Why didn't you ask for help? I know you could have. They don't evict people overnight." He gave no sign that he'd heard me. "How the hell do we go about getting you out of here?" He went on looking through me as if I were air. I said, "Look, Ishmael, are you sore at me or something?" At last he gave me an eye, but it wasn't a very friendly one. "I didn't invite you to make yourself my patron," he said, "so kindly refrain from patronizing me." "You want me to mind my own business?" "In a word, yes." I looked around helplessly. "You mean you actually want to stay here?" Once again, Ishmael's eye turned icy. All right," I told him, "but what about me?"
"What about you?"
"Well, we weren't finished, were we?"
"No, we weren't finished."
"So, what are you going to do? Do I just become failure number 5, or what?"
He sat blinking at me sullenly for a minute or two, and then he said, "There's no need for you to become failure number 5. We can continue as before."
At this point, a family strolled up to have a look at the most famous gorilla in the world. "So we can just continue as before, can we?" I said, and not in a whisper. "That strikes you as feasible, does it?"
The visitor suddenly found me much more interesting than Gargantua, who, after all, was just sitting there looking morose.
I said, "Well, where shall we begin? Do you remember where we left off?"
Intrigued, the visitors turned to see what response this would evoke from Ishmael. When it came, of course, only I could hear it. "Shut up."
"Shut up! I thought we were going to continue as before."
With a grunt, he shuffled to the rear of the cage and gave us a view of his back. The visitors decided I deserved a dirty look. They gave it to me and ambled off to the next attraction.
"Let me take you back," I said.
"No, thanks," he replied. "Incredible as it may seem, I'd rather live this way than on anyone's largesse, even yours."
"It'd only be largesse until we worked out something else."
"Something else being what? Doing stunts on The Tonight Show, a nightclub act?"
"Listen, if I can get in touch with the others, maybe we can work out some kind of joint effort."
"What the devil are you talking about?"
"I'm talking about the people who helped you get this far. You didn't do it by yourself, did you?"
He stared at me balefully from the shadows. "Go away," he snarled. "Just go away and leave me alone." I went away and left him alone.
I hadn't made plans for finding an Ishmael who didn't want to be rescued. I hadn't made plans for anything at all, in fact, so I didn't know what to do. I checked into the cheapest motel I could find and lay down to think things over. By 9 o'clock, I hadn't made any progress, so I went back to the carnival to see what was going on. I was in luck of sorts. A cold front was moving in, and a nasty light rain was sending the merrymakers home with their spirits dampened. "Do you suppose they're still called roustabouts?" I didn't ask the one I found closing down the sideshow tent. He looked to be about 80, and I offered him a 10 for the privilege of communing with the gorilla, who was no more gargantua than I was. He didn't appear to consider any of the ethical aspects of the matter, but sneered at the size of the bribe. I added another 10, and he left a light burning by the cage when he hobbled off. I dragged a folding chair over and sat down. Ishmael gazed at me for a few minutes, then asked where we had left off. "You just finished showing me that the story in Genesis that begins with the fall of Adam and ends with the murder of Abel is the story of our agricultural revolution as told by some of the earliest victims of that revolution.
And what remains, do you think?"
"I don't know. Maybe what remains is to bring it all together for me. I don't know what it all adds up to yet."
"Yes, I agree. Let me think for a bit." After a few minutes of head-scratching and earlobe tugging, however, Ishmael sent me away for the night. "I'm tired," he explained, "and I'm too cold to think."
The rain continued, and when I arrived at noon, I couldn't even find anyone to bribe. I'd picked up 2 blankets for Ishmael, and 1 for myself to keep him in countenance. We sat for a while, wallowing in our misery, then he reluctantly began. "Shortly before my departure, you asked me when we were going to get to the story enacted by the Leavers."
"Yeah, that's right."
"Why are you interested in knowing that story?"
The question nonplussed me. "Why wouldn't I be interested in knowing it?"
"I'm asking what the point is in your mind. You know that Abel is all but dead. Why learn the story he was enacting?"
"Because we need to know it, because people can't just give up a story. That's what the kids tried in the 60s. They tried to stop living like takers, but there was no other way for them to live. They failed because you can't just stop being in a story. You have to have another story to be in."
Ishmael nodded. "And if there is such a story, people should hear about it?"
"Yes, they should."
"Do you think they want to hear about it?"
"I don't know. I don't think you can start wanting something till you know it exists."
"Very true," said Ishmael. "Now, what do you suppose this story is about?"
"I have no idea."
"Well, you should at least know that it's about the same things your story is about: the meaning of the world, divine intentions in the world, and the destiny of man."
"Yes.
As I've said before, man became man enacting this story. What does that mean to you? Do you suppose a bunch of Australopithecines got together in the Olduvai Gorge and worked out a story to enact?"
"No."
"Then what can it possibly mean that man became man enacting this story?"
I chewed on that for a while and said, "What I understand by it is that this story wasn't something he dreamed up. It was something built into his lifestyle."
"Yes, that's it exactly. And how can we discover the story that was built into his lifestyle?"
Predictably, I said, "I didn't know."
"Then I'll propose a hypothesis," Ishmael said. "My hypothesis is this: your agricultural revolution was a revolution against this story."
I groaned. "I hope you're not expecting me to deduce the story from that."
"It won't be so difficult. After all, you yourself embraced the spirit of your revolution. You wouldn't care to live the lifestyle of pre-revolutionary times, would you?"
"No, I wouldn't."
"Therefore, on some level or other, you yourself must understand what your revolution was a revolution against."
I acknowledged that it was a clever argument.
"What would you feel if you knew that tomorrow you